Well, it seems like the cold weather has finally arrived in Wisconsin. Couldn't hurt to bundle up with a blanket and some hot cocoa and listen to this week's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Coming up in today's show, we'll hear from art reporter Sarah Hauer. Sarah has the latest on artist Robert Munch. We'll also hear from business reporter Rick Barrett on the economic impact of deer hunting season. Our first segment comes from news reporter Anissa Johnson. Anissa has a story in Sunday's paper about chronic absenteeism in Milwaukee public schools. That means they missed 3 or more weeks of school. Now, Milwaukee Public Schools is trying to tackle this problem. Reporter Gina Barton interviewed Anissa to find out more.
Today I'm here with Anissa Johnson, who's one of our education reporters, and she has a story in this weekend's paper that's looking at chronic absenteeism in schools and how that impacts students and how that impacts how well students do in school. So, Anissa, tell us a little bit about what is chronic absenteeism.
So researchers are starting to understand that excessive absences from school, whether they're excused or not, can have a profound effect on students' performances and really whether those students will graduate from high school.
So what schools did you go to and what programs did you learn about in reporting this story?
So we looked at South Division High School and Horace Mann Elementary School in West Dallas. And so essentially what they're doing in Milwaukee is they're pairing up kids that, you know, in the last year, maybe they got to school 80 to 90% of the time, but they need that little extra push to get there maybe 95% of that time. So they pair them up with a mentor. The mentor checks in every day. They do a little longer meeting every month. They they do some goal setting. They work through any issues at home or in school that might be barriers for a kid getting to school. At West Dallas, one of the really interesting things they're doing is they are doing what they call a windshield survey, where they go out into the community around that school and they look for things that might indicate barriers for getting to school. So, for example, like, does it have a high industrial? Is it a high industrial area? Is it easy to walk to school? Is it? Are there things that would exacerbate breathing problems that affect asthma? Things like that.
Now, tell us a little bit about what exactly is chronic absenteeism and how big of a problem is it? I mean, you had said students who are getting to school 90% of the time. I mean, to me, that's pretty good if you're getting to school 90% of the time.
Yes, that's right. And here's one of the what researchers are starting to find is that missing as little as 2 days a month. Now think about that. 2 days a month, that doesn't really seem like very much. Researchers are finding that 2 days a month can put kids on a track for dropping out of school. A new release of data from the U.S. Department of Education found this year that the problem is extremely widespread. What it found was that 14% of all students in public schools, that's about 6.5 million kids, missed 15 or more days of the school year. And the other really interesting thing about that is that it affects every kind of school. It affects urban schools, suburban schools, rural schools, every type of school.
One of the things that you wrote about is that it disproportionately affects low-income students and it has a greater effect on them. Why is that? What can you tell us about that?
What researchers would say is that the barriers that kids face in getting to school are just harder to fix if you're poor. There are myriad reasons kids miss school, right? Chronic health conditions, unreliable transportation, living in dangerous neighborhoods that make it tough to walk to school. And then when kids miss those days, it's just harder to bring them back up to speed. If you're an affluent kid and you miss a lot of school or you have some kind of problem that keeps you out of school. They hire a tutor. Your parents might hire a tutor. They might take you to a counselor. A lot of times, low-income kids just don't have those supports.
So I guess it makes sense that if you're not going to school, you're going to have academic problems. Why is this the focus of all of this study and all of this effort?
Well, the research around it is really just beginning to emerge, and part of that is it can be a hidden statistic. For years, the way schools looked at attendance were sort of through two lenses. One was truancy, which they dealt like with almost like a criminal problem or a penal problem, right? A court problem. And the other is by schools' average daily attendance. And what they have found is your school can have a very high average daily attendance, say 90%, and you can still have this very large subset of students who are missing 15 or more days or 10% of the school year. So they were sort of chasing the wrong data.
So what is the main thing that you want readers to take away from this story, and how do you think letting people know more about it will actually help solve the problem?
Well, for me, as an education writer, I guess you want to feel that you're bringing people information they didn't know, and it was information I didn't know. I think the kinds of things that Milwaukee Public Schools is working on and also West Dallas is working on, I think these are things that are going to improve outcomes for kids at those schools, and I think that's important to say.
So you don't think it's just going to improve their attendance? You think it's actually going to improve their achievement and their graduation rates and things like that?
That's what researchers would say. Now, on the other hand, this mentoring model isn't particularly new. What's new is they're getting new resources around training, and there's going to be some rigor around the data collection and the data analysis. So hopefully we'll be able to really see if this program does have an effect on these students' attendance and academic achievement.
So I know you'll be keeping track of that, and we'll be reading more stories from you about these issues.
I hope so.
Great. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
If you're interested in learning more about this story, visit jsonline.com. Again, it's also available in today's paper. Artist Charles Munch is known for his exquisite work with colors, which makes sense. He describes himself as being sensitive to color. Munch first learned to work with colors while working in art conservation. He spoke with art reporter Sarah Hauer, who in turn talked to producer Aaron Coy. Here's Sarah with more.
So for most of his career, Charles worked about half-time doing art conservation and about half-time doing his own painting. And during that time, he specialized in oil paintings. And for most of that time, him and his wife/partner, Jane, did this together. And they really only knew of one other team that was doing this kind of conserving work at the time. So they were able to work with all the major museums in the state, like the Milwaukee Art Museum, and the major collectors to help them conserve their art so that it could be shown to the public again.
So can you walk us through a little bit what an art conservator does and how Charles got into this?
Yeah, so an art conservator, the role is really trying to revive these paintings that have been damaged or not cared for in some way. So some of them are just incredibly dirty. You know, something that's been hung in someone's home, maybe above a fireplace, or a piece of artwork that's been, you know, partially exposed to the elements and kind of outside. And so those might just need to be wiped and cleaned with some solvents and soaps and whatever else to be repaired. But a lot of art, especially if it's been around for a long time, it's been transported. It's been brought different places, and that creates a lot of opportunities for it to get structurally damaged.
Now, being one of only a couple in the state that we know of, how did you find out about Charles?
So right now, Charles's own paintings are on display at the Tory Folliard Gallery, which is in the Third Ward here in Milwaukee. And so I had just kind of heard about him having this art conservator background. It's not something that he talks about as much. He's very passionate about being outside and being outdoors, and that's what you see in his own paintings, which is interesting because that is drastically different from the types of paintings that he restored. A lot of it is just these reminiscences of the Midwest. The paintings that are on display in the Tory Folliard Gallery, a lot of those are him thinking about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and time that he spent there. He's been traveling there for about the last, like, 15 years or so. In other paintings, he reflects on the area where he lives in Wisconsin. He lives near Lone Rock and right very close to the Wisconsin River. And so in a lot of his more river-inspired paintings, they're about the Wisconsin River that he loves so much. And in his paintings that have people in them, lately he's been thinking a lot about his own father. And so the men in those paintings, like this one that I'm thinking of, where it's a man carrying a boat, that's him kind of reflecting on his relationship with his father and things that they used to do together.
So did Charles tell you why he became a conservator or what led him to this position?
So Charles just kind of became a conservator before he really knew what it was. So he graduated from college and he moved up to Door County and was doing his own painting. He was doing that for about a year. And there he met one of the big art collectors in the state. And that man just kind of mentioned to him, I think you should be a conservator in order to fund his own painting, right? Because especially when you've just graduated college, it's hard to make a living just as an artist on your own. And so Charles ended up moving to New York, studying under a well-known conservator and getting trained in these old master paintings and how to repair and restore them. The first painting that he really conserved actually had so much wrong with it. It was really, really interesting. You know, not only was there damage to the paint in terms of just layers of grime and whatnot on it, but also there was a lot of structural damage in that one. So actually there was a big hole in the middle of this painting. The piece that had been torn away, that was saved so he could replace it and actually really bring this painting back to life, which is so cool.
So how has the transition from conservator to artist affected Munch's work?
Yeah, so Charles is retired from conserving art, and he's focusing just on his own painting full-time now. And that's what he really loves, and he's enjoying that. And we talked a little bit about how that past experience really plays into his own work. And one of the areas that he felt most affected his own paintings was needing to be able to mix colors with extreme precision. If you're going to apply new paint onto an old painting, you have to get the colors right. And one of the things Charles said was that even though he went to school for studio art, when he got his degree, he didn't take classes in color mixing. And so for him, it was this great lesson of trial and error all the time to be able to really figure out how to mix just right so that it would blend in nicely. And so that comes across in Charles' paintings, because his, you know, are these reminiscences of nature. We talked about how he knows when the colors are just right, and it's the way he described it, you know, it's just kind of at the end when he looks at the full painting and everything bounces off each other right.
This story is also available in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you're looking for it online, head to tapmilwaukee.com. All right, I'm not trying to make a bad joke here when I say that buck hunting season provides a boom for the state. Wisconsin's small towns and small businesses see green whenever the season rolls around. Reporter Rick Barrick talked to editor Jim Nelson about this trend and what exactly we're seeing this year.
Hi, this is Jim Nelson from the Journal Sentinel, and I'm here with business reporter Rick Barrett, who has a story coming up about the economic impact of one of the most important economic drivers in Wisconsin, our annual deer hunting season. How are you doing, Rick?
Yeah, hi, Jim. That's right.
The deer hunt, what kind of numbers do we have of people that hit the woods every year? How many people participate in the annual deer hunt? Well, thousands and thousands.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jim. If you looked at the total number of Wisconsin deer hunters from archery to crossbow to the gun hunt, it's, you know, pushing 600,000 plus.
That's remarkable. And as we've reported, and we know that some factories shut down and there's kind of a economic slowdown in some aspects of the economy, but there's also economic drivers from big economic impacts from the hunt. Sporting goods stores and meat processing stores. There's also some unusual businesses that you found and wrote about.
Yeah, there sure are. I mean, it's across the board, a little bit of everything and anything. One example that I thought was kind of fun, there is a place in Tomahawk that sells body lotions, soaps, and one of their products is an earth and grass-scented soap for deer hunters.
So that's going to make me smell like the woods? Is it meant to be like a musk so that I don't stand out in the woods and blend in, or is it sort of a novelty item?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, but the idea is to make you smell like dirt so that it will mask your human scent for that ever elusive buck.
That's pretty entertaining. There's also some other kinds of products that they use to appeal to hunting camps and hunting traditions that you tapped into, that you found. I think you mentioned an outfitter in Sheboygan or in Shiocton.
Mm-hmm.
What do they got going on there?
Well, it's kind of fun. The Hometown Grill in Shiocton is a place where about 35% of their overall business is attributed to hunting.
Wow.
And that's all year round. And what they found was they were opening up at 4 o'clock in the morning on opening day of the gun hunt.
Uh-huh.
And they found out it wasn't early enough.
No kidding.
So they pushed it up to 3:30.
Wow. And so they get, I bet they get two rushes, too. They get one early, and then they get one a little bit later on when the folks come out of the woods.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, they probably don't get too many people at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. They only get a few who are coming in just for that coffee and grab something quick to go to the woods. Most of the rush is after about 8 o'clock when those hunters are coming out of the woods for the first time. That's
sure.
when they go for the big breakfast.
Sure. A big breakfast and a cold beer, I suppose, too, right?
Well, there's that later.
Yeah. You also tapped into the businesses that are appealing to the non-hunters, to the hunting widows and their families, so to speak.
Yeah.
Who's marketing and trying to attract those businesses?
Wisconsin Dells would be a good example. The Kalahari restaurant does a lot with the non-hunters and the families of hunters through the water park. And then the Ho-Chunk Casino, too, has
uh-huh.
some things going on.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot to do out there beyond just hunting. Maybe there's some opportunities for some holiday shopping for our hunter friends.
Yeah, and that's a good point. A lot of the towns are having craft fairs, and they're having a venison feed, and they're having, you know, things that are fundraisers for the community. And it's a kickoff for shopping for a lot of the stores.
Sure. And it's a celebration of such an important tradition that we have, the deer hunting.
Oh, very much so. Not only for Wisconsin residents, but for the thousands of people who come here from other states to go hunting.
Well, stay safe out there, everybody.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Jim.
As of recording this show, we weren't quite sure when this story is going to run, Keep your eyes peeled at jsonline.com/business. Once it's up, you'll find it there. And that's all for this week's show. Again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next week as I take you behind the scenes at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.